Michael Avery with Classic Business.
Well, very exciting news. We saw on the 2nd of April, so certainly no April Fool's joke, the Gambia became the latest African nation to ratify the African Continental Free Trade Agreement, AFTCA. And that now means we meet the minimum threshold, 22 out of the 55 member states, for the trade agreement to go into effect. So what does that mean? Well, we'll find out tonight. We've assembled a rather formidable panel for you. And also in the context of Brexit, is this still a good idea, the sort of continent-wide integration? And it's a great pleasure to welcome Wamkele Kiabete Mene, who's the Chief Director for Africa Multilateral Economic Relations in the Department of Trade and Industry. Wamkele, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much, and good evening to you and the listeners.
We've also got on the line, all three on the line tonight, Dr. Martin Davies, MD for Emerging Markets and Africa at Deloitte. Martin, always great to chat to you.
Yeah, hi Michael, thanks. Always good to be here.
And Ronak Goppeldas, Director of Signal Risk and a Fellow at the Center for African Management and Markets at Gibbs. Ronak, first time on the show. Great to have you.
Thanks for having me. Great to be here.
Now, Wamkele, kick us off. In March last year, we saw the African Union launch the African Continental Free Trade Area. And so far, we've achieved quite a lot in the space of 12 months and a little bit of change. Why is AFTCA being talked about as a game changer for the continent?
Well, I think first to point out that in less than 3 or 4 years, we have negotiated one of the most comprehensive trade agreements in the world. The level of ambition is quite high, and it is comparable to world-class other trade agreements that exists at the moment. And the most important element of this agreement and what distinguishes it from all the other existing agreements is the fact that it has a very strong development content to it and specifically addresses Africa's development challenges from a trade and investment perspective. The heads of state, the assembly of heads of states, gave us in 2012 a directive to integrate markets in Africa and to do so in such a way that will address our industrial development objectives. And I'm very happy that we have made significant progress since 2012. As you noted in your introduction, we have 22 countries that have ratified the agreement. It will enter into force, presumably, I would assume, around July, August. And thereafter, the 22 countries will have to start implementing the agreement, but I'm sure there will be others who will soon also be beginning to implement the agreement. So in the last, I'll say 3 to 4 years, we have made significant progress. It's a game changer in terms of market integration. We have never had a market in Africa so integrated as the agreement gives the opportunity. We have one of our biggest development, investment, trade, economic challenges has been the fragmentation of markets across regions of Africa. And with this agreement, we are beginning to reverse that trend.
Ronak, it's very exciting, isn't it? We're finally going to see a very large market open up to move goods and services across borders in Africa. What sort of impact do you see this having on intra-African trade?
I mean, definitely if it happens, it's going to be a major boost to trade on the continent. You know, the exciting bit about this is just the size and the scale of it all. I mean, it has the potential to create a $2.5 trillion dollar economy in terms of GDP on the continent, you know, uniting all 55 countries, and, you know, can potentially boost intercontinental trade by 55%. So, you know, the momentum is there, although I'm, you know, a little bit more skeptical around some of the progress that's been made so far. I think the proof will be in the pudding. We need to see whether the political will is there. It's one thing to have something that's aspirational, and whilst there's momentum, I think, you know, you've got a lot of contradiction
Or Ronak, I'm going to have to ask you just to take a jump to the left, not ideologically speaking, your phone is breaking up. Martin, perhaps pick up on Ronak's point there. What are the challenges here for AFDCA? And from where I sit, Africa is not a country, obviously. We've got different states at different levels of development. Very difficult to negotiate trade agreements when you might have a Zambia, for example, or an Angola worried about, or let's use a Zambian example, a Zambia worried about an Angola coming into it, or a South Africa coming into its market and dominating.
Yeah, Michael, certainly. I mean, it's one has to look at this through a realist lens after all. I think Monkele and myself were up in Addis a month or two ago at the AU meeting, and I made a remark that it's extremely positive to hear probably the only region globally right now, I'm a global economy, is actually talking free trade. Certainly the Europeans are not. Donald Trump certainly isn't. But Africans are talking free trade. If we look back 3 years, who would have thought that? And this is a very positive story. It's a very positive marketing story. But again, Africa, you know, the continent is far too fragmented, too heterogeneous, and too big a geography, arguably, to really push a single free trade agenda. Yes, I think the intentions are good, but the impact will be observed and the benefits will be accrued at a far more local level. And again, the key thing here, you mentioned Zambia, and Zambia, of course, one of the signatories here. Well, and let's look at practically at the border post with the Congo, the DRC, at Kasumbalesa. It's a border post very close to Lubumbashi. There was a queue last week and a half ago, 72 kilometers long of trucks, which couldn't get across the border, despite the fact these are disagreements being ratified. So we can talk about the formal sort of tariff reductions, etc., but ultimately, for me, it comes down to the how do you address infrastructural constraints, A, B, the crossing over of products, especially across borders, and see the sort of ability to service that. What are the systems in place at these border posts, which at the best of times are barely functioning? So central governments can, you know, sign whatever policy they want, but ultimately the micro sort of implementation at the border post is what really counts.
72-kilometer-long border crossing traffic jam. I would not want to be stuck in that. Ronak, that really is the real challenge, is how do we ensure that implementation follows all the high-level political rhetoric?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, there are a couple of examples on the continent where, you know, the nationalist impulse has been propagated in countries like Nigeria and Tanzania. A regional level, you know, what you're seeing is the advocacy of greater liberalization. And those don't really tie up. So, you know, on the one hand, for this thing to work, countries are going to have to cede sovereignty. Yet, on the other hand, I'm not sure if the continental agenda matches the domestic political agenda that we're seeing. So, yes, the devil is in the detail. But the one thing that we need to focus on is this thing is aspirational, and that's a positive. For once, we're seeing African agency, and we're seeing the continent's policymakers take matters into their own hand. This is not the time to work towards, but let's see, you know, whether the
Ronak, I'm so sorry, but I have to phone you back on another line. You are just breaking up terribly. I can't hear a word you're saying, unfortunately. Martin, can the agreement be successful even if Nigeria doesn't become a signatory?
Yeah, well, you know, I've been working in Nigeria for the last year on some industrial strategy on behalf of the government, and what has been very difficult getting across to Nigerian policymakers, talking a number of ministers, including the vice president's office, is that industrial strategy cannot be delinked or divorced from a trade policy, a trade strategy. And the Nigerians, for example, think that import substitution is industrial strategy. It simply isn't. So I think the balance between how you liberalize trade and industry, it's not a zero-sum game. You cannot expect a multinational company to manufacture assemble in your country if you haven't got, you know, the product flow coming in across the border through the ports, whatever it may be, to promote their manufacturing. So this notion, I'm hoping it's still very alive and well in many countries in our region, I'm afraid. But this notion of import substitution to remedy a lack of, or to remedy deindustrialization, that's so 1960s, and that ain't going to fly going forward. And I think Nigeria is sort of exhibit A here. Mm. Another thing to mention, I think the real study and the figures put out, I've seen figures by our Department of Trade Industry, amongst others, talking about a combined GDP of whatever it may be, and trade can grow at 20% or 50%. I think the real key question one needs to look at here is, what's the non-commodity export value of African economies combined? That's where the value potential resides. Not in commodities. Commodities typically attract a minimal to zero tariff pretty much wherever they're exported. It's about the non-commodity production of which we seek to boost. How do we promote that? I think that, and we shouldn't just focus only on, you know, I think we've become somewhat maybe too focused or with this notion of fourth industrial revolution, industrialization. Of course, that's a long-term positive trend, and that's a generational play. And every African economy, including our own, in terms of reindustrialization, needs to pursue that. But the shorter win is around services. And I think the gains from industry are far less from an employment perspective what they would have been 10, 20, 30 years ago. What about the export of services? And how do we think about exporting African services into global value chain? I think that's something which we really need to focus a lot more on. Otherwise, I'm afraid a lot of it we're sort of not tapping the potential, I think, of what we could be.
What about goods, Martin? And I use the example here perhaps of a ShopRite 40-foot container by land, over land, on truck that goes full from the DC in South Africa and ends up in Angola and perhaps doesn't come back even one-fifth full. How do we ensure that we improve on those scales and ensure that we are trading a lot more with each other just when it comes to manufactured goods that consumers in different markets might really take to because they have sort of an exotic flavor?
You know, which comes first? Is it sort of, when you're talking about increasing, is it free trade agreements or is industrialization, i.e. value chain ecosystems? I think it goes hand in hand, but bad infrastructure is highly inflationary. I'll give you an anecdote. So we hosted our annual Africa Outlook conference in January at Deloitte, and we had, it was a public forum, we had the former CEO of a major retailer, Mr. Price, there, Stuart, and he was talking about the cost of their products into when exporting into the region. And typically a product off the shelf in Sandton, arguably, could be in Zambia or other neighboring economies you mentioned, 50% more expensive purely because of poor infrastructure. So we need to really sort of think about improving infrastructure systems and the like. First, arguably, I think the tariffs will have a positive impact, but that's sort of the cherry on the top. It's not going to be the key driver.
Yeah, absolutely. And then finally, we've just had horrible telephone lines tonight, so I haven't been able to bring Ronak or Wamkele back into it. It's all been you, Martin. Is this still a good idea? What are the lessons that we've learned from the Eurozone and how difficult that's been? I mean, we're not obviously talking about a common monetary union where we've got a single afro like the euro, but there clearly are lessons we can learn from Brexit.
Well, Peter, undoubtedly, I think this is a key issue right now. Michael and you know, the afros you mentioned, it was Peter Bowen many years ago, made a joke that the Europeans have euros, maybe we should have afros. And with him being in the position he is now, maybe that's a policy we can revisit. But with integration must come fiscal responsibility. And that has not been the case, particularly with any southern European countries in recent times. I think the story for us is so many, put this in context, capital has traditionally chased resources in our continent, and that is no means long-term sustainable desirable. Capital under the Africa Riding narrative, be it, and you mentioned Massmart, ShopRite, even venture capital, VC, private equity, has gone into chasing demographics. That's why Nigeria is so attractive to capital. It's a demographic play. Kenya, But where I'm going with this is the small countries in our continent have largely been forgotten. The small countries like Liberia, Sierra Leone, Malawi, Burundi, I'm not hearing anyone talking about investing in these countries. So they lack economies of demographic scale. We talk about often the demographic dividend. More accurately, it should be the density dividend, i.e. density of population, because last mile distribution is always the most expensive for products. How do we start to bang markets together effectively and create increased clusters of population regionally so as to make these economies arguably economically viable, which very often, unfortunately, they are not.
Yeah.
That, I think, is the sort of broader strategic story we need to look at here in our continent. From the Europe side of things, you know, Europe did this post-1945 for very different reasons. Maybe also one thing we haven't thought about is Europe pursued integration to prevent another great war breaking out amongst the Brits, the Germans, and the French. We have, many sporadic conflicts across our continent. Maybe that's also a consequence of lack of economic integration. If economies are integrated, value chains are integrated, and people trade with each other, the cost of conflict is significantly higher, and therefore the conflict is often constrained and reduced. That's the European story. Maybe something to consider in our case as well.
Very interesting. Dr. Martin Davies, MD of Emerging Markets and Africa, thanks so much for your time tonight. We also had, very briefly, Wamkele Mene, the Chief Director for Africa Multilateral Economic Relations in the DTI, and Ronak Opeldas, Director of Signal Risk.